Hello and welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and I'm speaking with Felix Salmon, who is the finance blogger for Reuters. This past week, he published an article on Reuters.com titled How to Deal with the Plutocrats. And Felix Salmon, in your article, you speak about the growing divide in the country between the financial elite and the middle class, and the divide between predatory capitalism on Wall Street and entrepreneurial capitalism in the Silicon Valley. But in the last week or so, we had the Facebook Goldman Sachs deal, and clearly Goldman Sachs is on Wall Street, and clearly they're going to be, whenever Facebook goes public, it'll probably be handled by Goldman Sachs. But what came out of that deal, at least the contours of the deal that we know so far, also describes a kind of new form of capitalism in the sense that companies want to stay private as much as possible, and they're skirting the FCC rules, the SEC rules, I should say, and the big players are getting in early and making all these deals as Goldman Sachs does through its wealthy partners who have to pony up, I think, $10 million before they can even enter the game. So do you see within the divisions that you talk about in your recent article another division, which is between private capital and the rest of the suckers who buy stocks on Wall Street?
Absolutely, yes. The one of the interesting things about the plutocrats, as we're calling them, you know, the international multi-gazillionaire elites, is that most of their money actually is private capital. If you are, you know, a Ukrainian steel magnate or, you know, a Brazilian beef magnate or something like that, the chances are that you made your money privately and that only maybe towards the very end of your career might you think about going public for reasons of, like, you don't know what to do with your, you know, how to divvy up the company between your family otherwise. So what we're seeing with Facebook and with Goldman Sachs is precisely this way in which wealth is increasingly being kept within that sort of plutocratic elite, and they don't feel any need to share it with the public, to list it on a public stock exchange. If they do list it on a public stock exchange, that's going to be, you know, against their best judgment, really. They feel forced into it by the SEC. And what Goldman Sachs and Facebook would much, much rather do is just keep the whole thing to themselves, keep it very private, keep it opaque. And, of course, if you're a broker-dealer like Goldman Sachs, opacity is how you make your money. Goldman Sachs doesn't really make any money from trading public stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. It makes a lot of money from trading, you know, illiquid private instruments like collateralized debt obligations or Facebook shares.
So, Felix Salmon, then I'm getting a picture here of this new capitalist elite and the plutocrats or oligarchs in this country. It would seem to me that the current system, where hedge funds are very powerful and pay less taxes, hedge fund managers pay less percentage of tax than their secretaries do, as we know, and these private equity groups, surely these hedge funds and private equity groups also have all the money from the plutocrats, don't they? Isn't that where the money's going and where the money's being shepherded and increased?
To a certain degree, yes. I mean, once you have a few hundred million dollars, you're likely to be parking a large chunk of it with hedge funds and private equity groups, especially the private equity people, actually. Those are the people who are really bad when it comes to paying income tax on their income and often just pay 15% capital gains tax instead. So this is yet another area where the money just kind of gravitates towards itself, and it circulates in a very small world of very rich people, and it doesn't trickle down. It doesn't become part of the broader economy so much. It's just rich people playing, you know, with money and transferring it among themselves.
So as the divide between the rich and the poor grows in this country, does that mean that this money is sort of growing in a sense of what I would describe as extractive capitalism, that wealth is being extracted and closeted, if you will, on the one hand, whereas the traditional role for Wall Street throughout the last couple of centuries, my understanding was that Wall Street's job was to create wealth and develop the entire economy. So I see a kind of Wall Street that's separate and apart from the rest of our struggling economy.
That's exactly right. What you see with growing inequality, of course, is basically wealth being moved from the mass of the economy, from like the rest of us, basically, to the elite. What we've seen over the past 15 years or so is that the share of income, you know, going to the top 1% of the population has gone up from 15% to 25%, something like that. And so that's a good 10% of the total national income, which used to go to the rest of us and doesn't anymore. So, you know, what we're seeing is money moving the wrong direction, essentially. We're seeing the flows going from those who can least afford it to those who least need it. And what we're not seeing is you know, the kind of gains to labor that we saw over most of the course of the history of the United States, you know, where productivity gains, if workers became more productive, then that would show up in increased wages. Nowadays, if workers become more productive, that shows up in increased returns to capital, that the owners of the companies do quite well and the workers don't.
Again, I'm speaking with finance writer Felix Salmon about his recent article on Reuters.com, How to Deal with the Plutocrats. So we've already seen some evidence of this. Here we have a president who may not even run again if the unemployment numbers are high. And we also saw in the recent election, which obviously the Republicans were successful, I think in part because of the Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United that allowed corporations unlimited money, which most of which went to the Republicans. But also there is this albatross over the president's neck, which is the economy. Ben Bernanke saying it's not going to really get better for 4 or 5 years. So the paradox here is that as bad as it gets for working America and the American middle class and for the president's political fortunes, quite often unemployment, the number of people out of work actually helps Wall Street. They profit when people lose their jobs. And now they're sitting apparently on a lot of cash. The corporate America is sitting on a couple of trillion, and the banks are sitting on $3 trillion as well. That's what we're told. I don't believe it, but that's what we're told.
There is a huge amount of cash on corporate balance sheets. That's true. And it's cash which is not being put to work employing people. So that, you know, there's a definite case sense in which everyone would win, even the banks. I mean, it's not true that the banks benefit from unemployment. What happens when unemployment goes up is that default rates go up as well, and that actually hurts the banks. So what they do is they get cautious and they don't lend out, and companies get cautious as well and they don't hire, and so the economy just keeps on being sluggish and unemployment remains high. I mean, politically speaking, one of the big problems is that the long-term unemployed tend not to vote, and so it's actually less of a political issue than it should be. If, you know, the population of the United States were demanding that politicians do something about unemployment, then we would probably be in a better place. But it doesn't seem that they are. It seems that their priorities are elsewhere right now. And so I think that you're absolutely right, that what we want to do is fiddle around with public policy, maybe with a tax code, in such a way that we encourage corporations to take all of that cash that they're sitting on and use it to employ people. And there are lots of really sensible ways you could do that. For instance, what you could do is you could exempt corporations from paying payroll taxes on new employees, like basically to the extent that their payrolls go up. Why we haven't done this, I have no idea.
And Felix Salmon, in your recent article on Reuters.com, How to Deal with the Plutocrats, you talked to a number of the super elite, and I was fascinated by their attitudes to the endangered middle class, given that so far it's the middle class taxpayers that had bailed them out, made them whole. They're bigger and stronger than ever, making profits and bonuses, and meanwhile Main Street is languishing. But they don't seem to feel any shame, or they're not even seem to be sorry about what happened. And I was astounded at their attitude towards the middle class. It's almost sort of like Marie Antoinette.
It is, and to be clear here, the person doing the heavy lifting on reporting this story and talking to rich people was not me, but rather my colleague Christia Freeland, who has the cover story in a new issue of The Atlantic, which I can definitely recommend.
Yeah, I was planning on calling her and see if I could interview her next week.
Absolutely. And it's a good story, and that's the one which I was riffing off in my post. And she spent a lot of time talking to these people, and one of her big points, and she's absolutely right about this, is that the international plutocracy is really that. It's very international. It's not based nearly as much as it used to be in the sort of nation state. The days when what was good for General Motors was good for America, the idea that, you know, you had these big American millionaires and, you know, Standard Oil or something like that, that this is very, these are very sort of national fortunes. It's still true to some degree, but increasingly these people feel like they're citizens of the world. They have houses in many different countries. They live in tax havens. They hang out with each other in lots of different countries and resorts around the world. And what they see, and this is, you know, important, is that income inequality is actually decreasing between countries, even as it's increasing within countries. And so what they're saying is that, yes, the middle class in the United States, you know, people earning, say, $50,000 or $60,000 a year, you know, household income in the United States, those people are being hurt. Because that income, while it's, you know, middle class in the United States, is actually extremely high if you're looking on a global level. And you can find, you know, very well-educated people in India or China or Brazil who are very happy to work for a fraction of that. And those people, you know, who might be earning $15,000 or $20,000 a year, are having a much improved life. And there are more of those people than there are of middle-class Americans. And so the view is that if we're making the world richer and more successful by increasing the size of the middle class in places like Brazil or India, then maybe we don't need to worry so much about the plight of the middle class in the U.S. because we all have this very, you know, international perspective. Of course, you know, it's only the plutocrats who really have that perspective. The rest of us are much more nationally oriented.
So in effect, Felix Salmon, Adam Smith's prediction that capital would transcend nationalities is already happening.
And it has happened, yeah, it's been happening for a long time. There's a sort of cyclicality around it. Capital was very international in the 20s, and then that kind of came to an end with the Cold War and with Bretton Woods and various things like that. But definitely we are seeing a level of internationalization of capital flows and of rich people, which is almost unprecedented in the history of the world. You know, that you have CEO, you know, the CEO classes, you know, when Chrysler is being run by an Italian or Pepsi is being run or Citigroup is being run by an Indian, you know, this is quite unexceptional now. It's a very global class, and these people think globally, and while they care about the U.S. middle class, it's often because the U.S. middle class is responsible for a large chunk of their profits. You know, when it comes to hiring people, they look abroad because those people are cheaper.
Well, just in closing, Felix Salmon, let's go to your solutions. How do you deal with the plutocrats?
Well, one of my solutions is to reduce the size of the financial sector, which is far too big, and which also makes the economy as a whole far too fragile, because where the financial sector makes its money is essentially through leverage, by lending, you know, by levering things up and making them more dangerous, like we saw during the financial crisis. If you have too much debt, you can cause a major catastrophe.
Well, they're also running up the price of gasoline at the moment, which hurts the middle class and helps Wall Street.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, when you get asset bubbles, like we're seeing right now, asset bubbles, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the price of gold or of silver recently.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things are dangerous for the economy, because when a bubble bursts, especially if there's leverage there, you know, you can have major economic impacts. And so what I'd like to see is the banks regulated much more like utilities. I'd like to see a tax on financial transactions. I would actually like to see a tax on wealth. Like, various countries have started experimenting with this, and I think it's a really good idea. Rather than just having an income tax, that you should have a wealth tax. And if you have, you know, a liquid net worth of millions of dollars, you should pay maybe 1% of that per year.
I'm afraid we've run out of time here today, Felix Salmon, but I thank you so much for joining us again. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I've been speaking with Felix Salmon, who's the finance blogger for Reuters. This past week, he published the article at Reuters.com titled How to Deal with the Plutocrats. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and engineer Devin Jordan. You may learn about the program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I'll be back tomorrow for another edition of Background Briefing. Until then, at 5 p.m., until then, bye for now.